Maggie McElwain, and Maggie McElwain will be co-presenting with me today. For those hands up who wasn't here at the last session, okay, so you probably don't even know who I am. I'm Allison Hoons, and I'm the clinical coordinator for physiotherapy at Providence Healthcare. I'm also a clinical assistant prof at UBC, and I'm a member of the BCRSRNet. And the BCRSRNet is a group of OTs and PTs that are passionate about seeing what we can do to help particularly clinicians in evidence-based practice. Okay, so this whole series of six workshops, one a month for 6 months, is being put on by the BCRSRNet. Okay, the two ladies in the hallway that took your registrations were Jo Clark and Sandy Lesnoff. Okay, so and Sandy's going to be presenting with me in January. Maggie, do you want to give a brief introduction where you work and what you do?
Yeah, I'm the clinical coordinator of physiotherapy at Children's Hospital and also a clinical instructor at UPC. I'm also involved in research actually at various levels. I'm on a research network, a Canadian research network for for CF that are looking at getting multi-center studies off the ground. I'm also involved in, just finished a phase two as a site coordinator for a phase two study, and we're just embarking on a phase three multi-center study where I'll be the site coordinator children's for that as well. And by Christmas holidays is going to be writing up a research paper that is due on January the 8th, so
wow.
I'm quite involved in research.
Thank you, Maggie. And Maggie actually agreed to participate at a moment's notice in this workshop, so we shall be very kind and loving to Maggie today. Okay, so you've got the presentation in front of you, and we're just going to take step by step through it. For those of you who weren't able to attend the last session, the first couple slides are a review of that, so you can catch up to speed with a little bit about where we were and where we're going with today's session, and then where we will be with the upcoming sessions. Okay? So basically, the evidence-based practice process involves, first of all, the identification of a clinical problem. Well, that's what you do every day, right? And then some skills in learning how to ask the question so you can find some answers to that clinical problem. And then how to acquire that information, the steps and strategies in order how to acquire that information, and then how to appraise it, how to apply it, and how to act on it. So these are the six workshops that we're doing. Last month, first of all, the first part of the workshop addressed how do you ask the question, how do you frame the question so you can get a good answer, so you can search the literature well for it. And then second of all, how do you search the literature well for it? Now, that information, as we said, is available if you go Google Physio Blog. That presentation is all there for you. But just know that Eugene also runs, as do librarians throughout the whole UBC library service, they run sessions on how to search Google, how to search PubMed, how to search other sites. So we've given you the information, but if you need some practice in front of a computer with a librarian, then I highly recommend them. I've attended Eugene's classes and I've learned a tremendous amount through it. So I recommend that you try that. Today's session is concentrating only on this part, on appraising. We've asked the question, we've acquired the evidence, now how do we appraise it? Okay. Now this session, there's generally two categories of types of articles. Those that are quantitative and those that are qualitative. This session and the January session are going to focus on the quantitative studies. The qualitative studies will be in February and March. Okay, so just so that we've set the groundwork for today. And then after that, the last session, session number six in April, will be about, okay, you've got the information, you asked the question, identified the problem, you've asked the question, you've acquired the information, you've appraised it, but what are some of the barriers to applying it? What are some of the things, what are some of the strategies of knowledge translation in the front line? What is difficult about getting those research findings into practice? And how can we help you with that part? Okay, so everybody's got a framework of where we've been and where we're going? Okay, so for a reminder for those that were here, if we turn to the next slide, and for those that weren't here, I've put up these two definitions of SACICS for what evidence-based practice is. All I want you to notice is that one was published in 1996 and one 4 years later. And what you should notice between the two is that the first one talks about conscientious, explicit, and judicious use of current best evidence in making decisions about care of patients. So it's about best evidence. And by four years later, the definition had changed, that it's actually the integration of best research evidence with clinical expertise and patient values. And we cannot lose sight of that as true evidence-based practice. We're teaching you the skills and reminding you about the skills for the best research evidence, but you still have to put it together with patient values and your own clinical expertise, okay? And why we're even pursuing this as a series of workshops is there's increasing evidence for people that look at, okay, well, how do we practice? How do we practice as PTs and OTs? What are the barriers out there for us? We have this goal about evidence-based practice, but what's happening? Is it truly happening, or what are the barriers that are there? What's facilitating them? This paper by Stevenson et al. Appeared in Physiotherapy Canada in the spring of 2005, and they got practitioners in stroke care for physio to rank by their relative importance the things that cause them to influence their current practice. And you'll see that professional literature is way down near the bottom of the list. That primarily it's experience, practical continuing education, and influence of colleagues. Those are the three top things that affect, in this survey, that affected, and other studies have reinforced these similar findings. And when you ask more questions to people about why this professional literature thing is so low on that ranking in comparison to the other factors, this is what they'll tell you. And the number one thing, time after time, is time. Lack of time. Lack of computing resources, not enough evidence, lack of access to the evidence because of people like Eugene and PABC that are providing us now with different ways to access that evidence. It's certainly a lot easier. And lack of skills in searching, lack of skills in appraising and interpreting, and lack of incentives. Okay? And it would be really nice if it was all compiled in one place. What we learned in the last session is there's a number of databases, right? We talked about Embase, we talked about PubMed, we talked about CINAHL, we talked about the numbers of different databases, and we recognized that not all journal articles are indexed in just one database, and that you often need a number of them. But there was a very, very important clinical trick that we learned at the end of the last session, and that is that once you develop a search strategy, that, you know, maybe this is a question that you're always involved in, okay, that you can set up your search history as an alert, and then you will always get daily, weekly, monthly, whatever you set it up with, any new articles that are published in that topic area. So I no longer search because I have my topic areas, and I teach electrophysical agents, ultrasound, muscle stim, TENS, that sort of thing. I have all of my alerts set up, so it comes to me in my email, and I just look at them and see if that's something that I want to pursue or not. Okay, and you can even get them sent to you with the abstracts. You can even get the table of contents from various journals if you have a favorite journal. The table of contents can come to you. So, for example, here at Providence Healthcare, we no longer have our subscriptions to a particular journal. Instead, we get email alerts of all the different journals, their table of contents, and abstracts, so you can scroll through them. So there are tricks as far as that lack of time issue. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay. Some of these things, publication bias, that means that typically there tend to be more articles published that will show that there's favorable results to that intervention rather than unfavorable results, because generally, as a research community, we might be less likely to publish a paper where we didn't find out what we thought we want was going to happen. Okay. Indexing issues, so how the librarians sort out into which databases it goes, language issues, and assessing the validity of papers. Okay. Today we're going to look at some of those issues. Okay. Can everybody hear me? Because I'm not near the microphone. So this was the one slide that we looked at as a summary for how to ask the question. And basically, the easiest format to use for how to ask a clinical question is the PICO format, where P represents patient and problem, I represents intervention, C represents comparison, and O, outcome. So let's take a situation. Who's got something that happened in their workplace today, yesterday, or the day before, where you thought, gee, I wish I had some information about that that could guide me as to what the best intervention is for that particular problem? Give me a clinical problem.
Mobilizing patients in ICU.
Mobilizing patients in ICU. And what do you mean about, okay, so let's work through the PICO of this. How would you describe the patient and the population? Okay, so let's just work through it. That's okay. It doesn't have to be perfect. So the patient in this case is the ICU patient, and this would be an ICU in a what kind of?
In a tertiary setting.
So that would be different, perhaps, than an ICU in another setting. So that would be important information to add in your lit search. And what would the problem be? Would it be all patients in ICU?
To me, the problem is the discrepancy in the literature I find is predominantly head of bed raising literature versus actually mobilizing non-bed literature.
Okay, so, but would you expect that information to be different for a cardiac patient than for an abdominal surgery patient with sepsis, for example?
I would expect some differences, except the practice is applied across the board to patients with restrictions.
And should it be?
By the surgeon. This is where I would like
to. Okay. Okay. So that's a couple of things that you think about in this P part here, is do you want to make it global? If you make it global, you pull in information perhaps about pediatrics as well. Do you want this to be adults? Okay. So adults in ICU in a tertiary setting. You decided that you want it across a large problem range. Okay.
Yeah, because that is what you normally come
reflective
across
of your practice. Okay. What would the intervention be?
The intervention would be getting them out of bed.
Okay. Now, how do we know? Let's suppose you put those details into your search and you had getting out of bed or you had mobilization. Remember we talked about keywords and we talked about mesh terms.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you ran one search and you had getting patients out of bed and you got zero results, does that mean that nothing exists?
No.
So what could you do to help you find other terms for mobilization or getting patients out of bed? Right. So in PubMed, there's something called mesh terms, for example. You can go to mesh terms, put in mobilization or getting patients out of bed, and it will give you all the words that the librarians use for indexing that kind of information. Okay? What about comparison? What are you comparing them to? What the intervention to?
To not getting them out of bed.
Not getting them out of bed. Okay? And are you interested in the time frame for that? Like early mobilization versus late mobilization?
And we could quantify comparison to raising the head of the bed.
Okay. So for those of you that weren't here for the last session, what should be things to sort of start to think about is if you had just put in those first key words that you had mentioned, mobilizing the patient in ICU, do you see how you'd get a very different search result than if you went through this PICO? So O for the outcome, what would the outcomes be? What kinds of things would you anticipate in the outcome?
Differences in length of stay, complications.
So length of stay are some keywords you can put in there. Complication is some complications. Ventilator-acquired pneumonia, okay? So if you didn't have an opportunity to practice this, how many people, hands up, were here at the last session? Okay, how many people have had an opportunity to do a search since the last session using PICO and using some of the keywords, MESH, some of the things that we talked about? Good. Okay, so a couple people have. If you're concerned about that, don't worry. There's all kinds of resources available to help you with it. So you can go back to the PowerPoint presentation, you can go back to the podcast, you can attend Eugene's or other librarians' classes on how to do the searches. And it's just a case of practice. And if you use these quick tips at the beginning, it actually takes less time than if you did a search that you got a whole bunch of results that were irrelevant to what you were looking for. Okay? Any questions about PICO? Okay, so the first thing you do in building your search strategy, and remember Charlotte Beck, who was the librarian who co-presented with me at the last session, this was from her slides. You first of all identify the key concepts from PICO, then you decide on your words. You either use keywords, and remember if you use keyword, it means you're searching exactly for what you've written. So if you wrote stroke, you wouldn't get strokes. You wouldn't get CVA. You would get only stroke. Mesh terms, okay, classification systems like mesh, allow you a much broader, okay? We'll include more things. Boolean operators. Hands up, remember what a Boolean operator was. It's not an Eastern European dance, but, yeah? Say it louder. And or but. So what happens when you put and between? Suppose you did stroke and wheelchair cushions. It looks for, yes? It narrows it down. It makes it specific to only those articles that include both terms. Okay, and if it was or? Okay, and then if there's a particular term that you don't want included, you would put in the nots. Okay? What was truncation? What do we talk about in truncation? Right, so you can put S-T-R-O-K, and then you look at that particular database. It might be a dollar sign, or it might be the other wild card, might be an asterisk or something like that. Another good example in physio is exercise. Exercise, exercising, exercised. If you put E-X and then the wild card, either the star or the dollar sign, it'll be a lot easier to retrieve. Okay. Give us an example in OT. Commonly searched term in OT. Dysphagia. So what would you use as a wild card for that? Because could you, are there other forms? Would you only search the word dysphagia, or you would, wouldn't you?
Swallowing.
Okay. But I meant like dysphagia doesn't have other option, it's at the end of dysphagia, right? Okay. So dysphagic, okay, yeah, there could be dysphagic, okay? So similar sort of idea, okay, truncation. And then we had another really powerful, powerful, powerful search strategy. This is how you get from getting a list of papers, of articles that are 900 articles down to 20. Often with good limits, you're able to do that. So if you say, oh, I only want systematic reviews, which we'll go over today, or meta-analyses, which we'll go over today, then you will only get those by putting in those limits, okay? You can also do it by age. So for this example in ICU, adults, some databases like PubMed say, do you want it 19 to 64, 64 to 85, etc., so you can become more narrowed and more specific. Okay, are those working in peds? Who works in peds here? Okay, so you might want 18 and under, or you might want 6 to 12. Okay, so you can work with your limits that way. Gender, if you only want male versus female. Language, so if you don't want to pull up papers in Spanish and Russian and French and Italian and all of those kinds of things, then limit it only to English, and you'll narrow your results a little bit more. Because really what the focus of these workshops is not how to do an academic lit search, but clinically, I have 10 minutes and I want to find out the most relevant paper in those 10 minutes, the best one paper to do, okay? So don't be afraid to use your limits extensively, okay? That's kind of a contradiction of terms. Okay, so just before we get started on this part, are there any questions regarding asking the question with people and then using the techniques of mesh terms versus classification, truncation, Boolean operators? Those terms should all be familiar enough now for us to move on. Yes?
Keywords, classification, and mesh terms, that's three different things?
No, classification and mesh terms is the same.
Okay, that's what I want.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Okay? Yes?
Using the Boolean operators, sometimes when doing a search, we can go like congenital heart disease and dysphagia.
Yeah.
You could also do a search on cardiology, a separate search on dysphagia.
And then combine them.
Yeah, what's better?
The second one is much better. Block by block strategy is much better, since you can play around with blocks later. If you want to add another search, we can play with the blocks later.
Okay, so the question is, and I'll just draw it up here. Let's suppose your example was, sorry?
Congenital heart disease and dysphagia.
Congenital heart disease and dysphagia.
Yeah.
Do you put those terms in at the same time, united by an and, all in one line? The way the librarians have instructed us through experience is search this one first, see how many, it will tell you how many references there are for that. Then this one, dysphagia, so congenital heart disease and then dysphagia. And then you have the option in some databases to combine those. And they have a little tick box here. In front of both of those, you say, yeah, we'll combine number one and number two. And your result in number three will be where those interact.
So do you put limits on each of those searches, or do you put limits only on the combined? Like, let's say you want to look at...
Well, the easiest way will be, in this example, find the proper subject heading for the book, search for it, find everything. So what subject heading will do, it will collocate all articles in one place. So since there are different ways to say cancer in the research, right? You can say cancer, tumor, neoplasm, whatever. If you use the proper subject heading, neoplasm in this case, it will find all articles about cancer. It doesn't matter what terms were used. So if the proper way will be finding the proper subject heading for the first, find everything written on this topic. Find proper subject heading for the second, find everything written on this topic, combine those, and then limit.
And then limit. Okay, so if we go back to that slide, your question was, in what order do you do these things? You'll see that the limits is at the very bottom.
Okay.
So follow that format of that slide, and this will be the most accurate and the quickest way for you to access the most relevant article. Okay. Now, I see that our goodies have arrived, and now might be a good place for us just to take a break for a second, because that was a lot of words and a lot of information in a relatively short piece of short time. So come and grab something, and then you can return to your seats, okay?